Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. When this station was founded 20 years ago, Jay Allison envisioned it as a community town hall for the airwaves, a place for people to meet, connect, and share with one another. We believe WCAI has lived up to Jay's vision and that today's program is an example of just how well-suited radio is to connect us, especially in these unprecedented and unsettling times. Over the past few weeks, we reached out across our region to people from all walks of life. We asked them to share their thoughts as they navigate through the pandemic. Today, we'll hear from a fire chief, a musician, a teacher, a pastor, and many others. We also want to hear from you, whether in reaction to what you hear on the program or to share your thoughts and experiences about the pandemic. Our number is 866-999-4626. You can also send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We also invite you to take more time and jot down your thoughts to be shared on a future program, which you can share via email or on our listener line, 508-548-9600, extension 5. Now we hear from an award-winning fiction writer who also serves as the Associate Director of the Cultural Center of Cape Cod.
I'm Lauren Wolk. As I spend time in isolation, I keep seeing ads for the U.S. Census. How important it is for us to be counted. And I agree with that. The thing is, I'm not just one person. I'm a lot of different people jammed into one skin. Well, that's true for all of us. Human beings are complicated. The problem is that some of my several selves are in conflict as we spend these long weeks together, waiting out the coronavirus. On the one hand, I'm happy to have more time at home to write. For years, I've been cramming my writing time into the early morning hours before I have to leave for work. Now, since I'm working from home, I don't have to devote time to travel or, for that matter, trying to look human. I roll out of bed and write until the rest of the world is ready for Zoom meetings or conference calls, or for the emails to begin once again. As a writer, I know how to turn isolation to my advantage, so I consider myself very lucky that I am able both to write and keep my job right now. But one of my other selves, the one who works for the Cultural Center of Cape Cod, is living in a state of high anxiety. That version of me is desperate to keep my beloved institution alive and well, so I spend my days writing grant proposals, letters to donors, press releases, whatever will let the world know that we're still here, we're still serving the community, we're more relevant than ever. Even if our doors are shut for a while, our lights out, our building empty, that version of myself gets impatient with the one who wants to write novels all day. And she's constantly berating my third self, the one who has worked steadily for the past several decades and wants nothing more than to immerse herself in this new quiet, this stillness, this slowness. I have grown fond of this unusual tranquility, even as I worry about the state of the world, about my mother living alone in Kitituat, about my sister living alone in Boston, about two sons who have sequestered themselves as well. Do they have enough to eat? Are they safe? Will I see them again soon? The fourth version of myself counts my blessings all day long, as if I'm a clock that marks the hours with gratitude on the one hand, guilt on the other. Compared to so many, we are incredibly fortunate, with no reason to complain. But here's the thing that all of myself have in common. We all know that millions of people the world over live in a constant state of fear and misfortune. Millions of people, many of them children, have spent their whole lives in poverty. For them, not having enough to eat is a constant. Being ill is a constant. Being vulnerable is a constant. Where, for them, is the worldwide call to action? Why is there no daily press conference for them? Poverty is no more their fault than coronavirus is the fault of those in our ICUs or our morgues. If being a writer has taught me anything, it's to look past the obvious to what's beneath, to see what we all have in common, our frailties, our confusion, our humanity. And I know that the vast majority of people want to do more for the more vulnerable among us. If working for a nonprofit has taught me anything, it's that there are kind and generous people everywhere who believe to their boots in causes like the arts, education, conservation, feeding the hungry, and healing the sick. But they shouldn't be the only ones giving and volunteering and wishing they could do more. Much more of what we all pay in taxes to run our governments should be devoted to soup kitchens and clinics and food banks and shelters, and to the permanent solutions that would make those places obsolete. If being a mother and a wife and a sister and a daughter and a friend has taught me anything, it's that we must take care of each other and our planet if we're to survive. And if this pandemic has taught me anything, it's that we have, right now, an opportunity to be better than we've been. I don't want to go back to the way things were. I want to go forward to the way things ought to be. All of my several selves agree that this right here is our chance for meaningful change. Margaret Mead said, quote, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has," unquote. But the time has come to see what a huge group of thoughtful, committed citizens can do. Millions of thoughtful, committed citizens, billions of us. Just imagine what we can accomplish if we stand up to be counted.
That was Lauren Wolk, author of the Newbery Award-winning novel Wolf Hollow and Beyond the Bright Blue Sea, that won a Scott O'Dell Award for historical fiction. She's also the associate director of the Cultural Center of Cape Cod. Lauren's essays bring up many of the mixed emotions we might all be feeling at this time. A WCAI reporter recently saw a Facebook post that caught her attention. The post included an image of first responders in full PPE wheeling a patient on a stretcher to an ambulance. You can see the image right now at our website, capeandislands.org. We reached out to the person who captured the image to find out why he posted it.
My name is Kevin Gallagher, and I'm the fire chief in the town of Acushnet, Massachusetts. Within the past few days, we transported to the hospital one of the 17 residents of Acushnet known to be infected with the COVID-19 virus. We followed all necessary protocols, and all treatment and transport standards were met, if not exceeded. Two crew members made entry, and I remained more than 7 feet away in full PPE in the event a third paramedic was needed. We followed the book to the letter, but the book didn't prepare us for the fear that we saw in the patient's eyes. I spoke with the patient's spouse. I said that part of my job is to work towards getting our community to understand that the virus is here and that the crisis is real, not just something talked about at a televised briefing. They agreed. "People are not taking this seriously," they said. "I don't understand it." I took this photo, making sure that no identifying items were included. I showed it to the spouse and asked if I had their permission to display it because it is real. They agreed. "It will help people understand that the virus is here in town," I told them. They nodded. "It is. It is," they said. "We are not the focus of this post. You are Acushnet. This is one of our neighbors. Honor them by following the social distancing requirements, constantly washing your hands, limiting possible exposure, and being smart during this unprecedented time."
For those of us isolating safely at home, it might be difficult to have a sense of the seriousness of the pandemic. We not only rely on first responders to keep us safe, but to remind us that even though we might not witness the virus firsthand, it is out there. We're all at risk, and we're all responsible for keeping one another safe. Up next, we hear from someone who has faced the reality of the virus. Holly Egger is a writer living on Martha's Vineyard who weaves together a tale of William James, tennis, and her sister-in-law's coronavirus battle.
William James, the great 19th century philosopher and psychologist, wrote that the only advantage of sickness is that it provides insight into one soul. Back then, everyone was far too familiar with illness, death, and the practice of quarantining. Before 20th century science on vaccines, children got sick and were gone in a matter of days. The fear of disease was so much a part of daily life that nobody, at least based on my research, ever felt immune to anything. They never got to experience the joy of, say, being carefree. But because they didn't understand how germs worked yet, people took care of their family members and neighbors no matter what, unwittingly putting themselves at great risk of infection. People weren't usually left alone, and they didn't usually die alone, as they are now during a current 21st century pandemic. Today, we find ourselves anxiously contending with a novel coronavirus so contagious that everyone is required to be isolated, affording us all so much time for insight into our souls that even William James would have been impressed. I think, for just about everybody by now, this pandemic has become personal. Already I've lost two friends, not to mention lots of sleep over my brother's and a niece's bouts, neither of which, thankfully, required hospitalization, and I've cried for countries decimated and for humanity in general. In the midst of all this horror, though, I have found some inspiration, namely from the victorious fight waged early in April by my courageous sister-in-law, a doctor in Rhode Island. My sister-in-law, who was 57, apparently caught an especially whopping case of the coronavirus in her clinic. After a week self-quarantining at home with her head feeling like a bowling ball and not really being able to breathe, she thought she was through with it when suddenly she relapsed, her fever spiking so high and her breath becoming so labored that her husband called 911. The ambulance was required to bring her to a local hospital where they didn't know she was coming, were unprepared to deal with a COVID-19 case, and, impossibly, left her stranded alone in a hallway for 6 hours before her husband managed to get another ambulance to take her up to a Boston hospital. Even there, they kept her waiting outside in the parking lot, shoved her back in the ambulance for a while, then finally installed her in a specially converted room. So began 6 feverish days in solitary confinement, battling pneumonia and then an excruciating cough, while also being assaulted by inhumane GI tract indignities. As a physician, she was fully aware that the fact she'd been admitted to the hospital meant her odds of making it out weren't too great. Yet somehow she willed herself to make it through each day and night until the next visit from her truly wonderful-sounding doctor, an immigrant from Syria. Every day he assured her she was not going to die. "You are part of our family now, and we are going to get you through this," he told her. She said it was terrifying to be so alone on the battlefield, her only weapons Tylenol and an IV. Moments when she felt ambitious, she would stumble over to her big window to look down on the sidewalk, wanting to scream at the people to go home, get out of harm's way. More often, her body aching and head searing, she would lie in bed and stare at the ticking wall clock, breaking down time and steeling herself to get through each minute. I think I would have lost my mind. Only her doctor and an assigned nurse were allowed to enter her room, and only one at a time. Each 3-minute checkup required such a time-consuming team effort on the part of the caregivers that she vowed, as a caregiver herself, not to ask for anything she could possibly do on her own. While she looked forward to visits from her nurses, amazing, anonymous automatons inside their PPE armor, their required lack of interaction sometimes left her feeling more isolated. They would hastily give her a tray, check her vital signs, and leave. After each visit, through her half-window to the hallway, she would watch her nurse meet a second co-worker who was waiting there to help peel off the gloves and gown and immediately stuff them into a biohazard box. I would have resented feeling like such a pariah. I also would have wanted to feel special, to have the hospital workers congratulate me on surviving another night. But there were so many patients on that COVID floor, and so many didn't survive. My noble sister-in-law, too weak to speak, wasn't looking for any medals. She said she merely felt overwhelmed at how selfless the staff was, putting their own families in jeopardy, risking their lives to save hers. What I wonder yet haven't dared ask is, weren't you afraid you might die before anyone could get suited up in time to sit with you, to hold your hand? Weren't you afraid you were going to die alone? Now recovering at home, my brave sister-in-law recounted this tale, and we wept in awe at her courage, at the pain she had endured, in frustration at not being able to help her. Later, my husband, who has always admired his little sister's grit, asked if she thought possibly, in addition to her medical training, her teenage years playing competitive tennis might have helped. If maybe tennis had taught her to believe in herself, to know she held the power to muster whatever was necessary for any fight. He was in absolutely no way comparing her corona experience to a tennis game, and she shrugged off the suggestion, instead crediting excellent medical care, her strong immune system, and luck. What he was talking about was her otherworldly equanimity despite being all alone, her ability to approach each minute with a deep conviction that, yes, this was the ultimate fight of her life, and, yes, she would win. I am a terrible tennis player, but I am always looking for metaphors. Obviously, battling this novel virus is a billion times harder than any game. It truly is life and death. But combating each cluster of coronavirus moments seems to me to require the same sort of tenacity and guts it might take to win a point in some kind of nightmarish, endless tennis match in hell. My husband tells a story of once playing a tennis tournament in 110-degree heat, not sure whether it was his sneakers or the court melting. and how after his match he watched his sister, behind 5-3 in her final set, somehow dig deep enough to pull out the victory. I try to envision my sister-in-law at 14, playing singles on that sweltering court. Then she could see and hear people cheering for her. Her mother was in the stands. In the hospital, she was all alone, petrified and in agonizing pain. Tennis probably didn't teach her stamina and determination. She was likely just born the way she is. But tennis did teach her how to stay centered and enabled her to discover early on what she was made of, and that may have come in handy as she fought for her life. Not everyone has my sister-in-law's combination of innate pluck, confidence, and know-how, so we need to continue to band together as one community to beat this dread disease. In this day and age, at least in this blessed country, no one should have to wage such an isolated battle. No one should have to die alone. Perhaps we can spend some of this time by ourselves in quarantine pursuing less painful quests for insights into our souls, a la William James, through meditation, journaling, and solitary walks. Because while self-reliance and self-knowledge are some of life's greatest gifts, everything will be a lot better when we can face life's adversities with our family, friends, and neighbors by our side.
Holly Egger lives on Martha's Vineyard, and we are pleased to hear her sister-in-law has recovered from the virus. We'll hear more reflections on the pandemic after a break. You're listening to The Point, and today we are hearing some reflections on the pandemic from listeners that we have reached out to. We also would love to hear your thoughts and experiences. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. If you are going out these days and following CDC guidelines, you're likely wearing a face covering or a mask. You may have felt self-conscious at first, or maybe, like our next guest, uncomfortable. Here's Reverend Bruce Epperly.
I don't like masks. They are sweaty and uncomfortable and impede communication. You can't show your emotions when you wear a mask. As a child, I had asthma, and when I wore a Halloween mask, I felt like I was suffocating. I didn't like masks then, and I don't like them now. But regardless of my feelings, I choose to wear a mask these days. I choose to wear a mask even when I'm the only one walking at sunrise on Craigville and Coville's beaches. As a pastor, I believe in the importance of witness and vocation. I wear a mask for the safety of others and my own, but more importantly, as a witness to my faith and concern for others. Wearing a mask has become a call to prayer. I wear a mask because I care for the well-being of other people. My faith tells me to love my neighbor as myself and to care for the least of these, the most vulnerable around me. Wearing a mask reminds me that I am my neighbor's keeper. We suspended worship at our church, as did others, not out of fear, but as an act of faith and care for others. Our prayers and praises bring healing and health to the world, even if we're on Zoom and not meeting in our historic sanctuary. I wear a mask because I have a calling I need to honor. Call and vocation are essential to my life as a pastor. Longevity is good, as Martin Luther King says, but I want to stay alive because I have a calling to be healthy, so that I can minister to the spiritual needs of persons in our congregation and community. As a person with risk factors myself, I have a responsibility to stay healthy, to care for my family, most especially my 2 young grandchildren, whom I nurture by my presence, homeschooling, and unconditional love each day. As a writer, I need to stay healthy to continue to provide spiritual guidance for people across the country. This isn't a matter of ego, of seeing myself as special, but fulfilling the roles the Creator has given me, most especially by providing comfort and guidance in this time of pandemic. I wear a mask because I'm part of something larger than myself. I'm connected with everyone I encounter, both human and non-human. I'm joined in a fabric of relatedness with all creation. What I do shapes the well-being of others, and my calling is to do something beautiful for God in every relationship and to live out my role as companion with my Creator in healing the earth. And so despite the discomfort, I wear a mask because it's an act of love for my neighbor, and I strive in this small way to love my neighbor as I love myself.
Bruce Epperly is the pastor at the South Congregational Church in Centerville. The pandemic brought abrupt changes to lives. We went from normal routines of work, school, and social activities to a new way of living over the course of just a few days. Up next, we hear how one person's reaction to those changes evolved over the course of several weeks.
My name is Daniel Levine, and I live in Wellfleet. I've been a Cape Codder for 40 years, a full-time musician for 20 years, fiddler, singer, and ukulele player. My work is entertaining at nursing homes and adult day centers, making music with preschool kids and playing in bands. That was until March 15, 2020. Soon after, I started writing random notes. March 25th, 10 days at home. I'm used to working, playing music day and night, or talking about it, or doing publicity, or trying to get more gigs, and living the rest of my life in between. With no work and living alone, I find myself on the phone with friends and family three times as much as before. In the past 10 days, I've had long conversations with 25 people from around the corner, across the country, including friends in the Czech Republic and New Zealand. I know I am blessed with my life, and I fear so much for others getting the virus, losing their jobs, being vulnerable to abusive partners or family members. I go walking on nice days, and I've been watching the sunset from my car nearly every evening, sometimes with friends in the next car, and the windows roll down so we can talk in person. April 4th, 20 days at home. I'm settling in. I cleaned the house yesterday. I've always grown sprouts, growing my own salad indoors, alfalfa and radish, mung beans, in jars on my kitchen counter. Today, my friend Jen and I planted pea shoots and sunflower seeds. These sit by a sunny window. It's an experiment. We could be preparing for the apocalypse. Tonight, I had a great idea. Julie Charland, my music partner, and I can perform a Zoom concert. Rather than playing as a duo, which doesn't work on Zoom, we could play as two soloists back to back, side to side, but not in the same room. April 5th. Masks are now seen on many people. Tomorrow will be 3 weeks since March 15th. I'm learning to help myself and others by way of sending healing energy, similar to Reiki. Some of my friends and some of their siblings are very anxious, and I'm helping them from afar. This is one thing I can do to support other people. April 13th, nearly a month in. What I miss most are the Irish and old-time music sessions I co-host. I miss my musician friends, the camaraderie of sharing a regular jam with beginners and professionals playing together for the pure joy of it. And I really miss my friends at Capabilities. It's an adult day center for people with developmental disabilities where we've been making music together for 15 years. I like to think I'll be okay for money. I have some small savings and I've applied for relief grants and I'm receiving a modest monthly check already. Friends have offered to help me if I need food or rent, and I feel blessed by their offers of support. As a gig worker, I'll soon be able to apply for unemployment. Yippee! I don't worry about myself or my people, but I'm constantly thinking about the people who were holding on by a thread before this. Millions of them in this country alone. Billions around the world. What will happen to them? April 16th, a month in. A quote from Keith Lockhart, conductor of the Boston Pops, on being out of work. It's hard to know who I am. Me. Work gives meaning to life. April 20th, nearly 5 weeks at home. Such bad and sad news today. 55 died of the virus in one Brooklyn nursing home. Governor Baker said right now we're in the middle of the surge, and two-thirds of the residents of a local nursing home tested positive. It's likely I know some of these people. April 22nd, 5 weeks. This cataclysmic event is moving me to make changes in my life that I've put on hold. You may contact me through my website. I can offer help with the sprouting and share information on the upcoming Zoom concert. What keeps me engaged in these challenging times? Well, I don't have a TV, WCAI and WOMR, where I've been a volunteer DJ for 34 years, are my connection to the world beyond my yard. The other link is the Provincetown Independent, the new weekly Outer Cape newspaper. What keeps me hopeful? Spring flowers in vases all yellow, daffodils, tulips, and forsythia. What keeps me going? Communicating with family and friends, meditating, jogging on my mini trampoline, eating healthy food, and a strong belief in the afterlife.
Daniel Levine is a musician living in Wellfleet. What keeps you hopeful? How are you coping? Share your thoughts with us at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. You can also send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. County officials, with the help of Cape Cod Healthcare, opened the Cape's first drive-through testing site at Cape Cod Community College last month. Last month, a first responder from the Cape chronicled his experience getting tested at the drive-through with an audio recording. Here's his experience.
So I'm about to get tested for COVID. I'm in this lane of cones driving up to a overhead awning. There's two nurses in biohazard suits with full respirators, gowns, all that stuff, and then one nurse with just a face shield, a respirator, and a paper gown. They checked my ID once at the first parking lot, and then they waved me through to a parking spot while I had to wait. They're not even talking to the people. They're showing them, like, informational cards through the windows that are all the way rolled up. There's a lot of cars, a couple of space buildings, campus police, that's really it. And there's signs everywhere that say no videos and no photos. So I'm the next person up. Nobody behind me at all. I have just a mild dry cough that I've had for maybe a day or two. And very fatigued. Yesterday I was really fatigued. I took a nap, which I never do. And today I still just feel like I just can't wait to sit down. Not really out of breath at all. I'm just tired. Just pretty surreal that all this stuff is happening. The car in front of me, a BMW convertible with Massachusetts plates, not New York plates, Massachusetts plates. It's getting swabbed right now. So it looks like the nurses are alternating between cars. So they took the test sample from the car ahead of me and they're putting it into some sort of sterile packaging where it'll be shipped off and results will be available in 4 days. So I called Cape Cod Healthcare at about 11:15 or 11:20, and I'm already getting tested now. So the testing time frame is pretty quick if you're a first responder, but still 4 days for results. Well, there's two other nurses that are in the full respirators. They're changing gloves. This is surreal. I didn't think I'd be seeing this at all. Hoping, rather. And I'm next. I just showed my IDs. Just verifying I am who I say I am. All right, here goes.
Feel better, take care.
That was audio provided to WCAI by a Cape Cod first responder as he drove through the coronavirus testing site at Cape Cod Community College. He did test positive and following quarantine is back at work. Seniors are at a higher risk for complications with the coronavirus, and those living in nursing homes have been particularly hard hit. Seniors living alone can also struggle with isolation and loneliness. In this next piece, we hear from Shelley Christensen on Martha's Vineyard. She's been isolating with her elderly mother, which represents its own set of challenges and joys.
I shared a home with a cat once upon a time. In the mornings, I fed the cat and left him to his morning bath as I rushed off to work. And after work, I came home, fed the cat again, fed myself. Then we both curled up in cushy seats and barely budged for the rest of the evening. In time, I quit the 9-to-5 to become a stay-at-home freelancer. And once I was at home with the cat nearly all the time, I realized the cat stayed curled up in his cushy seat, not just in the evening, but all the livelong day. That was all he did. Today, the house cat is my mother. I mean this with utmost respect. My mother and I have lived together for 3 years now. She is the senior citizen to my junior senior citizen. In the morning, she has breakfast and takes her bath around the time I used to head out the door, before pandemic snuck up on the world as we knew it. I had the proverbial places to go, things to do, and people to see. I always reserved holes in my calendar for Mom to take her to chair yoga or lunch at the senior center or some happening at the library. Then I'd drop her back at home and head off to the races again. In the evenings, we'd have dinner and sink into cushy chairs, watch TV, and go to bed. That routine was so 2 months ago. Abruptly, I am a stay-at-homer again. I work virtually, as we say now. I am upstairs, Mom is downstairs. She is in her cushy seat, but not just in the evening anymore. She is in it all the livelong day, just like my old cat. Unlike the cat, though, Mom is fixated on a screen. The screen glows nonstop. The Today Show, Rachel Ray, The View, The Talk, Divorce Court, and what have you. When I worked outside the house, I was conveniently deaf and blind to whatever Mom was doing or not doing on the home front. But now, there is no ignoring that Mom is but 14 stair steps away, just sitting. One of the unhealthiest things a body can do, short of getting coughed on these days. My patience fell apart about a week into lockdown. So I figured I'd make lemonade out of this new lemon for her own good and for my own. I was distracted from working mindfully anyway, and lately work had dwindled in the first place. And what had I been doing too much of myself? Yep, sitting in front of a glowing screen. So, I went out and scored a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle and a word game, two age-old mother-daughter pastimes. We had neglected both in recent years. I got us both into chair yoga online. Yes, that means more sitting and glowing screens, but in a wholesome way. For Easter, we dyed eggs and made an Easter basket for the first time in 60 years or so. I took Mom along for the rides when I delivered meds to an elderly friend and corned beef and cabbage to another. I take her along for rides to the grocery store, too, because the views on the way along State Beach never get old. When we're lucky, we catch sight of a kitesurfing ballet. Mom and I have called people we haven't reached out to in ages. We've even Zoomed some people. Because life is not promised, as we've been reminded of late. We haven't forsaken cushy seats and glowing screens altogether, but we have gotten more into streaming. Mom amazed that we can watch whatever we want, whenever we want to. My favorite thing is our walks in the all-outdoors, stretching limbs and lungs, soaking up vitamin D. We did this before the pandemic. Now we do it more. Mom hardly protests anymore if it's chilly out. She just tightens up the hood of her parka. I dial back from my power walk pace to Mom pace, the better to take in the littlest leaf shoots and other small mercies of spring. We pass the homes of neighbors, the homeschooling family, the COVID refugees from Boston, the snowbirds who are late to return from Florida this year. And at last we reach Nantucket Sound in its full glory from Cape Cod to Cape Pogue. Mom is mainly into the cloud formations. I'm more into the surf, the ebb and flow, the reassurance that the cosmos goes on.
Shelley Christensen is a freelance writer living on Martha's Vineyard. You can see a picture of Shelley with her mother at our website, capeandislands.org. We'll have more reflections on life in a pandemic after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are hearing reflections on life and a pandemic from some of our listeners. We invite you to share your thoughts with us, 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. While all of us have had to make adjustments while living in a pandemic, students and educators have had their world upended. With schools closed across the Commonwealth, teachers and students are navigating a new world of remote learning. Takuro Nagayoshi is the 2020 Massachusetts Teacher of the Year and an English teacher at New Bedford High. He shares his thoughts on how these changes are impacting him and his students.
It's been 6 weeks since I had physical contact with another person. As a teacher, this means no high fives for a job well done, that fist bump to a student while walking down the halls, a shoulder nudge to redirect that kid off task, you know, a hug in a moment of crisis. I think there's so much that we're missing out on right now, but those that hurt the most are such human moments and experiences. I think I speak on behalf of all teachers that what we miss the most is our students. We think and worry about for our kids every day. We're worried, sure, about schoolwork and students falling behind, but you know, at a more fundamental level, we're worried about them, their mental health, their social emotional well-being. I worry about the kids that I can't get in contact with because of tech issues. I worry about our students for whom schools were a safe place that provided warm meals. I worry about their families, if they still have jobs, how they're weathering the crisis. And I think, like, especially my heart breaks out for my seniors. They've had so much taken away from them. It was supposed to be their year to live it up at prom and to walk down the graduation aisle. I remember how some of the deepest conversations that I had with my high school friends were around this time, where we were all processing together what our life was going to look like after graduation. And, you know, reflecting on that, I just feel like so much has been robbed away from them. I empathize with them. And as the state's 2020 Teacher of the Year, I also feel like a lot has been upended from my life. When all the cancellations started early in March, you know, my speeches, my conferences, award ceremonies, you know, had it not been for the COVID situation, I'd be in the White House at this very moment. And so I was frustrated to have something so hard that I worked for to not come to fruition. But at the same time, it was such a deeply uncomfortable feeling to feel frustrated and upset about something like that. Because in so many other ways, I am privileged. I have a title, this job, a home, my family and I are healthy. And with so much time for reflection, I feel like I've come a long way to reconcile these tensions and my emotions, that two truths in being sad and grateful can coexist, and that there's always a silver lining. It's okay to grieve the loss of normalcy or opportunities and routines in life, but also that the silver lining in all of this disruption is that we're pushed to unlearn really fundamental parts about ourselves and our identity. I've never felt more introspective, and ironically, in all of this social distancing, more closer to the people in my life. I'm intentional about my connection with other people. I've reconnected with old friends. I had an hour-long conversation with my sister the other day, which, you know, I don't usually do, and even the substance of my conversation with my students have changed. We're more focused on being there for each other and my responsibility as an adult, I think, in their lives have changed as well. I canceled my Zoom session the other day and a student sent me a text saying, "Hey, Mr. Nagayoshi, I'm checking in because you don't usually cancel Zoom classes unless you're not feeling too hot. So I just wanted to see how you're doing." And like, it's that kind of stuff that gives me a lot of hope. You know, my hope is that after all of this, we come out of society as more self-aware, kind, and present versions of ourselves. And thinking of that gives me a lot of optimism.
Takuro Nagayoshi is the 2020 Massachusetts Teacher of the Year. He teaches English at New Bedford High. Next week, we'll talk more in depth about how teens are coping with changes brought on by the pandemic. If you are a parent of a teen or a teen yourself, we hope you will join the conversation. Let's talk to Becky, who's giving us a call. Good morning, Becky.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And sure. I'm just really grateful that I'm in a position where I can share my $1,200 with the immigrant community here on Cape Cod. And, you know, for those that are interested in that possibility, the Catholic Social Services is organizing to receive funds, and they're located in New Bedford, I believe. And they're organizing to receive donations that they will distribute on the Cape and Islands to the immigrant population who work for all of us in our nursing homes, caring for our families, our friends. They work in our yards as landscapers. They work in the resort industry, cleaning the rooms that our friends and families come and rent when they're vacationing. They work in our restaurants, washing the dishes and collecting dirty dishes from the tables. They're kind, gentle, hardworking people. And so if people are able to consider donations to the Catholic Social Services, it's a wonderful opportunity. And they are located in Fall River. And the Catholic Social Services, the finance department at 1600 Bay Street in Fall River, Massachusetts, 02724.
All right. Becky, thank you for sharing that with us. We really appreciate that. Thanks for that information. And now we're going to turn our thoughts to a graduating senior.
I'm Olivia DePonte, and I'm a senior at Falmouth High School. I would give anything to even sit in my most dreaded class of school one more time. And what's hard is that we just won't get closure on what's been such an enormous chapter of our lives. I had been grounded by the fact that I would have a graduation. I would have my very last dance performance. I would have my senior tennis season. I would have all these wonderful things that have been hyped up to us since the beginning of high school. All of the moments that allow us to, you know, really celebrate being seniors and making it this far. And it felt like they were just all kind of swept out from under our feet. This won't last forever. Life will go on. And we'll all look back on this and realize, hopefully, how far that the world has come since that point.
Thoughts from Olivia DePonte, senior at Falmouth High School. Now we hear thoughts from a local music teacher.
My name is Sarah Richards. I'm a mother of three and a music educator. The Friday we learned we would not be returning to school, I was speaking with the president and vice president of the West Falmouth Preschool, where I teach music. I had mentioned to them about teaching online music classes, and they were pretty excited about the idea. I created a Facebook group and shared it, and other people shared it, and now we have a pretty solid little group. We make music, and we sing, and we dance, and we can forget about all the uncertain and scary and sad things that are going on in our world right now. And truly, this small time brings me personally a lot of joy. The response I've gotten has been really wonderful. I get videos and photos of my students, ones that I know and other students that I don't know, but I'm getting to know through this group. It's been a really wonderful way to bring people and children together through the joy of music.
And it brings me so much joy to be able to do that and pay it forward to our littlest members of our community.
And for those who find themselves getting anxious at this time, we end the hour with Mary Akunzo, also known as Dr. Mary. In addition to her psychotherapy practice and her work with Calmer Choice, she's a writer and avid cook.
The storm. The storm arrived with plenty of warning. It's funny how warnings meet ears at such different rates and with such different intensities. But it came, nonetheless, and it stayed, at least for now. And with it came cautions and caveats and changes. And with the changing winds, some rebirth, they say, is beginning to emerge. This could have been predicted, but somehow never planned. But this rebirth seems to demand loss. And along the way, sacrifice and destruction become the norm. Yet despite the enormity of grief, the extent and sustainability of rejuvenation remains unknown, along with 47 plus other unknowns that are thought about hourly or minutely. Some claim spiritual growth, some claim environmental revival, some claim Darwinian effects, and others adhere to the randomness of it all. Backward meaning-making is a skill in common, and it is often fathomable and largely dependent on what we yearn for. Moving past the eye of the storm is perhaps the most frightening of all. Less battening down of the hatches, yes, more chance of winds running amok, and more devastation. No or less protection and shielding from the rain, getting caught in a downpour even greater after possibly not learning lessons of preparation. Though they do say stormy seas make strong sailors, and the hope is that strength in some good measure will help with navigation, but more importantly, assist us while coping with the effects of rough winds and tough seas. Riding these waves creates an ability to control our circumstances and is a reminder of that illusion. There is a stability and a comfort in knowing so many others are in the midst of the exact same storm. United in isolation, together in separateness, they say. May any lesson worth keeping allow the remnant of such stormy weather to remain in our collective consciousness. Joined in ways to eventually enjoy the sunshine respectfully, modestly, frugally, and with acceptance, grace, less fear, and more hope.
That was The Storm by Mary Akunzo. We'll post transcripts and audio of all the essays we aired this hour at our website, capeandislands.org. If you'd like to share your story, send an email to thepoint@capeandislands.org or call our listener line, 508-548-9600 extension 5. Share your story and be sure to include your contact information. We hope to share more listener stories in the coming weeks and months and continue connecting with one another over the airways. I'm Indy Todd. Stay safe and thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.